नमो विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनि नामिनि नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणी जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर ज्वाइनिंग टुडे सेशन। वी हैव बीन डिस्कसिंग फ्रॉम द सेवेंथ चैप्टर ऑफ भगवद गीता। So last week we started with the seventh chapter. So with the seventh chapter we entered into the section on bhakti. Actually, Krishna introduced the section on bhakti in the last verse of sixth chapter only. Yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam samaye yukta tamo matah. So he did say shraddhavan bhajate. So, but what is that bhajan? How is it carried out? He did not elaborate on that. So he starts this chapter by elaborating on this point. What is this Shraddhavan bhajate? What is that bhajan? So the chapter starts with this verse, famous verse. I think this is the verse which has been maximum quoted in Srila Prabhupada's purports, the Bhagavad Gita verse. I guess I may be wrong, I have to check it, but this has been very often quoted by Srila Prabhupada in his purports. So Krishna says, starts this chapter. For many of the chapters, the chapter starts by Arjuna prompting Krishna to speak on a particular subject matter. He prompts by asking a question. But in this chapter, Krishna continues from where he left off. As we discussed that correct. Thank you for giving. Actually, maximum number of lectures Prabhupada has given on this verse, actually. Correct. So, maximum number of lectures Srila Prabhupada has spoken on this particular verse. Correct. You are right. Thank you. So actually, as we discussed that, you know, it is one coherent conversation that is happening between Arjuna and Krishna. So it's not that as soon as one chapter ends, Krishna says, okay, Arjuna, now this chapter is over. Now I will start the next chapter. No, it is not like that. It is one coherent conversation. Vyasadev has divided it into 18 chapters based on wherever he sensed a thematic change. But otherwise, it is one conversation that happened in the form of question and answer, question and answer, question and answer between Krishna and Arjuna. So therefore, Krishna in the sixth chapter spoke about Ashtanga Yoga. In fact, the first chapter was setting the scene. Second chapter was about Sankhya. He spoke about the basic difference between body and soul. That was a primary discussion. And the second part was more or less a description of various kinds of yogas. You can say it's like a summary of Bhagavad Gita. And then the third chapter, he starts by discussing Karma Yoga, both Sakama and Nishkama Karma Yoga. So in Nishkama Karma Yoga, he talks about Nishkama Karma Yoga, and then he also speaks about the obstacle to practice of Nishkama Karma Yoga being material attachment or lust. And then in the fourth chapter, he speaks about practicing Karma Yoga. How is Karma Yoga actually practiced, and how Karma Yoga, Nishkama Karma Yoga culminates in Jnana. That is described in the fourth chapter. In the fifth chapter, he talks about Jnana Yoga, which is practiced in two different ways. One is actually Grihastha Sannyas, another is Karma Sannyas. So, how by practicing either of these two forms of Karma Yoga, of which actually Krishna himself recommends Grihastha Sannyas and not Karma Sannyas, how one attains liberation is described in the fifth chapter. Then in the sixth chapter, Krishna presented Ashtanga Yoga as an alternative for attaining liberation, as an easier alternative for attaining liberation. So therefore, Krishna presented Ashtanga Yoga to be better than all the other yogas that he had mentioned. Tapasvibhyodiko yogi jnanibhyopi matodikaha karmibhyaschadiko yogi tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. So Krishna told Arjuna that, Arjuna, of all the processes that I have mentioned, this yoga that I have presented is the topmost, therefore you should be a yogi. But is this the greatest of all the yogas? In the last verse of that chapter, Krishna gives a hint. He says, no. Yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamomataha. So Krishna says that of all the different types of yogis that I have discussed, one who faithfully worships me, he is the best. Shraddhavan bhajate. Now, what is this bhajan? What is the nature of this bhajan or worship? How is this worship carried out? He continues explaining that in this first verse of seventh chapter. He says, mai yasakta mana partha yogam yunjan madashrayah asamshayam samagram mam yatajnyasyasi tachruno. He says, mai yasakta mana, with your mind attached to me, yogam yunjan, and establishing a relationship with me, madashrayah, surrendering unto me, by this process, samagram mam yatajnyasyasi, you will know me in my complete form, asamshayam, without a doubt. Shrunu, tachrunu, please listen about it, he says. So, broadly, there are three aspects of, these are the three characteristics of bhakti. First is, mai asaktamana. Mai asaktamana means, we already discussed this. Generally, mind is attached to the goal. And mind is primarily attached to the goal. Secondarily, the mind may focus on the means to attain that goal. But primarily, that is why the Jnana Yogis are called as Moksha Parayana. Moksha Para. Moksha Para means they are dedicated to Mukti or liberation. And that is where they focus their mind on. And as a means of attaining that Mukti, secondarily they may be attached to Jnana, but their primary attachment and focus, their mind dwells on Mukti. But devotees are called as Narayana Parayana, Vasudeva Parayana, which means their primary absorption, their mind dwells on Krishna as the goal. Therefore, Mai Asaktamana indicates Krishna is not their means to attain a different goal, but Krishna is their goal. Is their goal, actually. And Yogam Yunjan, they wish to establish a relationship with Krishna. So goal does not mean they want to merge in Krishna, but they want to establish a relationship with Krishna. Because goal can mean, someone may say goal can mean the same abode as Krishna. Someone may say like that. So therefore that is clarified here. Krishna is their goal. And what does that mean? It means to have a relationship with Krishna. Yogam Yunjan. And for that, how do they attain it? Madashrayaha. By surrendering to Krishna. Meaning, by surrendering only to Krishna and not to any other demigods or anyone else. And by surrendering to Krishna only through the process of bhakti and not through any other process. Okay. And by that, what happens? Only by that one completely understands Krishna. So, mam samagram yasyasi. So, one knows Krishna completely through this process of bhakti, shuddha bhakti. So, this is how Krishna describes this path of bhakti in the very first verse of seventh chapter, where he Of course, he has introduced bhakti in the previous, in the last verse of sixth chapter, but he elaborates on that bhakti in this particular first verse. So, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur commenting on this verse, he gives the seventh chapter, the first topic that will be discussed is the powers of the Lord. The second topic that will be discussed will be the four types of person who worship the Lord and the four types of persons who would not worship the Lord. Then Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, in the first six chapters of the Gita, Jnana and Ashtanga Yoga, which lead to liberation and which depend upon Nishkama Karma Yoga, which first purifies the heart, have been described. So, first one practices Nishkama Karma Yoga. When the heart becomes purified, then they have two options, either for attaining liberation, either through practice of Jnana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. But all these three are called as Guni Bhuta Bhakti, where karma, jnana or yoga are primary and bhakti is secondary or gauna. So therefore it is called as Guni Bhuta Bhakti. Okay. In the middle six chapters, two types of bhakti will be described, he says. First is Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti. Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti means where bhakti is predominant, but there is some tinge of karma, jnana, yoga there. And the second type of bhakti that will be discussed is Shuddha Bhakti or pure devotional service. Through Shuddha Bhakti, one attains Prema, either in Vaikuntha or in Goloka. And through Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti, one attains Vaikuntha, either in the form of Salokya Mukti or in the form of Shantarati. Shantarati means a very rudimentary, very preliminary relationship with Krishna, which is not fully blossomed. That is called as Shantarati. Okay. So these two types of bhakti will be described in this chapter. So this type of bhakti, which is predominant bhakti, not pure bhakti, but predominant bhakti, is dependent on karma, jnana, etc. Whereas Shuddha Bhakti is independent of karma, jnana, etc. And moreover, it can independently yield all the goals such as Swarga, Moksha, without performance of any other process. So one need not. So sometimes the argument arises that, look, you are not a pure devotee. So therefore, you have to practice karma, jnana, etc. This is not correct, actually. Even if one may not have pure desires, still for fulfilling those desires, one can practice jnana karma the anavrita bhakti. Bhakti which is uncovered by jnana karma, etc. Which means pure bhakti with pure practice of the nine limbs of devotional service. So one should not say that you are not pure, therefore, you should also practice karma or varnashrama. You know, that is not the recommendation of the Shastras. Of course, if one has a lot of faith in that, then one can practice. That's a different thing. But someone may say, but the Shruti says, Tameva viditva atimrityumeti, knowing it, one surpasses death. How can you say that without knowledge, just by bhakti, one can achieve liberation? If you say, very clearly the Shastras say, only through jnana one attains liberation. So in response to this, he says, no. Tameva viditva adimrityumeti refers to, by knowing Paramatma, one can achieve liberation. And the means of knowing Paramatma is bhakti only. It is only by the bhakti element of that practice one attains knowledge of Paramatma, and by that only one attains liberation. So therefore, that's what he says here. It is possible to grasp the Brahman, which is beyond the gunas, only by the process of bhakti, which is also beyond the gunas, and not by sattvic knowledge of the Atma being different from the body. So, knowledge of the difference between body and soul is not transcendental knowledge. It is not actually beyond three modes. It is within three modes only. It is a sattvic knowledge. So, but to know Krishna in any of his features, either Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagavan, it is possible only by bhakti. So we will see this later also. Bhaktyaham ekaya grahyaha, in Bhagavatam it comes, or in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyaschasmi tattvatah. Only by bhakti one can understand Krishna or realize Krishna, even in his Brahman feature. Right? So, and the accomplishment of liberation through jnana and ashtanga yoga is brought about only through the influence of bhakti, which is a subordinate element to these practices. So therefore, the shastras are very clear in presenting that without the element of bhakti, karma, jnana, yoga, everything is useless and insignificant. So, like that. So, therefore, one can get liberation by knowledge beyond the gunas, which means knowledge of Paramatma, which arises through bhakti. And sometimes also, one can attain liberation without Paramatma knowledge arising from bhakti, by bhakti alone. So, knowledge of Paramatma arises in an jnana yogi or an ashtanga yogi who may be practicing yoga or jnana mixed with bhakti, by which they attain the knowledge of Paramatma and through which they attain liberation. But for practicing pure devotees, they can attain liberation, a superior form of liberation, without necessarily attaining knowledge of Paramatma, but directly by understanding the Bhagavan feature through practice of pure devotional service, one can directly achieve liberation. Okay. So, he says, he quotes these verses. Yovai sadhana sampattihi purushartha chatushtaye taya vinata dapnoti naro narayanashrayaha. Even without performing actions for attaining the four purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama and moksha, the person who surrenders to Narayana can attain all those goals. So therefore, one should not say one can attain liberation only through jnana. Through bhakti, you can attain only prema. No, through bhakti, you can attain all the goals that can be attained by karma, jnana, yoga, can be attained by practice of bhakti alone. Like that. So, and then he quotes many such verses to illustrate this point. Yannama sakrit shravanat pukkashopi vimuchyate samsara. How this escape from samsara, which is called as mukti, which is generally ascribed to the path of jnana or yoga, he says just by once hearing the holy name in a pure way, one can attain that same liberation from samsara. Like that. So thus, according to many such statements in the scriptures, liberation can be attained by bhakti alone. Like that. Anyways, so this is where we ended our discussion last Friday. Before we continue our discussion forward, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions based on what we discussed last week, you can please go ahead, or whatever we have summarized today. If there are any quick discussion points, you can please go ahead and ask. Okay, there is one question in the chat box. I will take that first. In the case of Shantarati, you spoke that there is a distant relationship. My understanding is that the five types of liberation is inferior to Shantarati. Please correct me if I am wrong. If that is so, even those who attain Samipya, for them there is no relationship, hence it is inferior. Well, see, actually Samipya can mean actually Prema. Actually, it's not that even the Nitya Siddha devotees of Krishna, they are in Vaikuntha. They have Salokya also. they stay in the same planet as Krishna, not that they are devoid of Salokya. They have Sarshti also. They have the same opulence as Krishna, not that they are devoid of that also. Sarupya, they have form similar to Krishna, not that they are devoid of that also. And at the same time, they have Prema also. So when we talk about Salokya, we are talking about those personalities who exclusively get Salokya only, but not Prema. So these kind of practitioners of predominant bhakti, not pure bhakti, they go to the abode of the Lord, but they may not have an active relationship with Krishna. So that is possible. But pure devotees, they have Salokya also. Not that they will not be staying in the same planet as Krishna. Samipya also. They will have Samipya Mukti also. They may stay very close. And at the same time, they have Prema also. Like that. So, is Samipya inferior? If it is only Samipya without a relationship, without Prema, then it is inferior. But if that Samipya is due to an evolved Prema, then that Samipya is, then that kind of Mukti is not called as Samipya Mukti, it is actually called as Prema. So in that case, that is not inferior. Okay, there are two hands up. Let's take Keshav Priyamath.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Dandavat Pranamaji. Prabhuji, here you are explaining about Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti and Shuddha Bhakti, Prabhuji. I mean, SVCD purport is explaining that, Prabhuji. But generally, if we see Bhagavad Gita, it looks like a sequential, like the explanation of Krishna is looking like a sequential one, Prabhuji, like Sakama Karma Yoga, Nishkama Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, two types, then Dhyana Yoga. And then the last shloka, he says, there is a pure bhakti. So generally, it is like that only, like to explain, Prabhuji, that direct devotional service as given to us by Srila Prabhupada, is there a mention of Krishna about that, Prabhuji? It looks like this. I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
I don't understand your question, Mother.
Prabhuji, it looks like a sequential, like after Dhyana Yoga and someone takes Bhakti part more, then he will become, he will carry on to Bhakti note, Prabhuji. Like the last shloka only Krishna's...
It is not a sequence. No.
Yeah, but it looks like that, no, Prabhuji. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, it may look like that, but it is not that.
Because
if, like it was that, if it was that, if it was that, see, if it looks like that, it is Pratyaksha Brahma. If it is explained like that by the Acharyas, then it is Shabda Brahma.
Yeah.
So, we are supposed to accept Shabda Brahma and not Pratyaksha Brahma.
Yeah. But Shuddha Bhakti, is it, Krishna is explaining from this shloka about direct devotional service or from the previous one, Prabhuji, like Karma, Jnana, Yoga, after that, that Bhakti part predominates.
6.47, last verse, he talks about pure Bhakti. And in this first verse also, he's talking about pure Bhakti. Because when you want to talk about Bhakti, when you want to talk about, when you want to talk about orange juice, you know, to a person who does not know what is water also, first, you have to discuss what is water. And then, so like for example, if you want to talk about contaminated water, if the person does not even know what is pure water, he first has to be told what is pure water. Then subsequently, contaminated water can be described. Because in this middle six chapters, he is primarily going to talk about predominant bhakti and pure bhakti. It is important to first introduce pure bhakti and then also show that how this pure bhakti can also sometimes be contaminated by karma, jnana or yoga. That he will describe later. But for now, in 6.47 and 7.1, he is talking about pure devotional service. Okay. I think you muted yourself.
Reshna Prabhuji.
Yeah, did you hear the answer?
Maybe? Yeah, Prabhuji, I heard Prabhuji. Yes, Prabhuji, I am coming. Thank you, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Okay. Sachi Pran Guru.
Prabhuji, Dhanat Pranam, Prabhuji. Please accept
me. Dhanat Pranam.
Prabhuji, you mentioned that in all the yogas, there is the bhakti element. So which is the without bhakti element, there is no connection actually. So bhakti correct. Element is the one who makes that yoga's connection or perfection. So yes. that bhakti element, although it is not directly visible, so that bhakti is what kind of bhakti means? Are they practicing 9 process of devotional service or any type of bhakti means it's not necessarily a shuddha bhakti?
I mean, bhakti means shuddha bhakti only. If you are talking about the bhakti element in mixed devotional service, that bhakti element is pure only. Na? When you are talking about adulterated water, it is like asking, in adulterated water, is that water pure or adulterated?
No, what I meant to say, Prabhuji, if it is a pure bhakti, then what is the process of what they follow exactly? Like in Ashtanga Yoga, there is an element of pure bhakti. What is the process?
It is a very redundant thing. If there is an element of pure bhakti, I mean, there is element of bhakti. Element of bhakti means pure bhakti only. So, because if it was an element, there is nothing like element of mixed bhakti. You know, it is like, okay, in orange juice, has water and whatever the orange concentrate. So is that water pure water or it has some grape juice and lime juice? No. When we say element of bhakti means that element of bhakti is pure only. And we still call it mixed devotional service because it has other elements of karma or jnana or yoga like that. But when we say it is mixed with the limbs of bhakti, the limbs of bhakti are pure only. There is nothing called as mixed devotional service where the bhakti element is pure or not. Bhakti element means pure only. So what will be the aspects of that pure devotional? What will be the aspect of how is that bhakti element practiced? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Padasevanam. Some of those aspects, some of the preliminary aspects, not the deeper aspects. The deeper aspects may not be there. The deeper aspects like Smaranam may be difficult. Shravanam Kirtanam is possible for them. They will practice those elements. There will be some element of deity worship may also be there. Like that. Is that okay, bro? You have to unmute yourself, Sachi Pran Guru. Okay. I think you are not. Are you able to unmute yourself?
Yes, Prabhuji. Okay. Haribol, Prabhuji.
Yeah.
Yes, Prabhuji.
Okay. Yes, thank you, Prabhu. Shyam Chandra Prabhu.
Yeah, Hare Krishna Prabhu. Dandat Pranam. Am I audible?
Dandat Prabhu. Yeah, if you can speak closer to the mic, Prabhu, it is a little bit.
Now is it better?
Yeah.
Okay, Prabhuji, in this Sarupya Mukti, when one gets the same form of the Lord, that is 400 Lord
similar form,
and then he can stay in Vaikuntha planet. So I'm trying to understand, then Salokya and Sarsi are already available to such a person.
Isn't it?
So why is there a distinction? Yeah. Because who is that category of people who get Salokya but not Sarupya? Or they get Sarsi but not Salokya and Sarupya. Because Sarupya, because it has to be...
Nein. Generally, Salokya everyone gets. That is preliminary. Then, apart from then Salokya, but not everyone may have Sarupya. In Vaikuntha, it's not that everyone has a form similar to the Lord. There are many, many different forms. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there is a list of some 10-12 different types of forms that may exist for various different reasons. So not everyone has a form similar to the Lord even in Vaikuntha. That is a very generic understanding. But there are much more finer details to it. Not everyone has Sarupya with the Lord even in Vaikuntha. So, like that. And Sarshti also not everyone may have. It is not necessary. Samipya also not everyone will have. This is also not necessary. Salokya everyone will have. One will stay in the same planet as everyone. But not everyone may have Sarupya. Not everyone may have Sarshti. Not everyone may have Samipya.
That means there are living beings in Vaikuntha planets who are not having Sarshti. That is because Vaikuntha planet is all Aishwarya and opulence, no? So still there can be
people when we talk about Sarshti, we are talking about a comparable opulence with the Supreme Lord that not all living entities may have. They will certainly have the opulence of Vaikuntha,
but may
not be comparable opulence with the Supreme Lord. If you see the descriptions of the living entities, the forms in Vaikuntha, according to the description of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you know, some do have opulence very comparable to the Supreme Lord. And Gopakumar, while standing at the entrance of Vaikuntha, he many times mistakes some of those denizens to be the same as Lord Narayana.
Mm-hmm.
But at other times he also sees some other forms. You know, some have non-human forms also, which are sometimes ascribed to. Some people have the form of a tortoise. It is mentioned that is Sarupya with Kurma. Some have the form of Varaha, which is considered to be Sarupya with Varaha. But some of them have forms which are neither Sarupya with the Lord Narayana's form nor Sarupya with any of these avatars. But it is just that they have a particular relationship with Krishna and they are happy relationship with the Supreme Lord in that particular form, and it is not Sarupya at all. So it's not that everyone in Vaikuntha has Sarupya also.
Okay.
And some of them have even temporary forms. They have a permanent form, but they also assume some temporary forms to give pleasure to the Lord in Vaikuntha. Those kind of forms are also there. Sometimes the Lord wants to see his devotees perform some demigod type leela. Some of them, they assume such temporary forms. Some of them assume temporary forms like monkeys also, like that. There is another description that in Vaikuntha, there are forms where, if you see in the fifth canto description, there are representative forms of demigods which are worshipped as representatives of the Supreme Lord. Like the form of Indra is worshipped as a representative of the Supreme Lord in a particular varsha in Jambudvip. So such forms are also there. So in that particular varsha, one who worship that representative form of the demigod, they may attain Sarupya to that form. Even though such forms may not be there in the spiritual world, as a form of Lord, but it is Sarupya to that representative form in that particular varsha. Those kind of forms are also there in Vaikuntha. So not everything is Sarupya.
Okay, Prabhu. It's clear now. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Anything else anyone would like to share as and before we move forward? Okay, let's continue then. So, Srila Vishnachaka Thakur says, now let us return to the verse. So, now that he has given a brief overview about the types of bhakti and all that, now he says, now let us return to the verse. In your statement at the end of last chapter, Yoginam Api Sarvesham, this is Arjuna speaking. Arjuna says to Krishna, he says, in your statement at the end of the last chapter, that is yoginam api sarvesham. I have understood that you have indicated the unique quality of your own devotee who absorbs his mind in you and has faith in you. But what type of a devotee is he? This is the question of Arjuna. What kind of a devotee is he who absorbs his mind in you? Madgate anantaratmana and shraddhavan. He has faith in you. Bhajate. He worships you. He is a devotee. What kind of a devotee is he? One would expect that he is qualified with knowledge and realization. He must have jnana and vijnana. The Lord then answers in two verses. He answers in two verses. What kind of a devotee is he? So he is mentioning here. Maya asakta mana partha yogam yuddhan madashtayah asamshayam samagram mam itagyasya sitachunu. So then he says, realization will occur gradually in proportion to the intensity of worship. Okay, jnana will be there gradually by the intensity, based on the intensity of worship, that jnana will transform into vijnana, that knowledge will transform into realization. Like that, he says. And this is indicated by this verse. Bhaktihi pareshanubhavo viraktihi anyatra chaishatrika ekakalaha prapadyamanasya yatashnatasyuhu tushtihi pushtihi kshudapayo anugasam. Okay, you all know this verse. I will just take the essential part which is being illustrated here. He says, there are three things that simultaneously happen. Bhakti means intensity of worship. Okay. When the intensity of worship increases, two other things parallelly increase. What are those two? Two are para isha anubhava. Para isha anubhava means experience of Krishna. And virakti. Virakti means detachment from matter. Both these things increase with the intensity of worship. So, this is, that's what he says here in the previous verse, in the previous line. Realization will occur gradually in proportion to the intensity of worship. So both these factors indicate realization. Experience of Krishna is a realization. Detachment from matter is also a realization. That realization comes with the increase in intensity of worship. In proportion to the intensity of worship, one attains realization in the form of pareshanubhava and virakti, in the form of experience of Krishna and detachment from matter. Just by eating a handful of food, one does not attain satisfaction or nourishment. But by taking a lot of food, one does get satisfaction and nourishment. When you have attained the stage of attachment to me, my asaktamana, in my form of Shyam Sundar with yellow cloth, then you will know me. Okay. So realization happens just like by taking just one morsel of food. You don't get complete satisfaction and nourishment, but you get some satisfaction and nourishment. But when you eat lot of food, stomach full of food, not stomach full, half stomach full, and 1/4 water, 1/4 air, that is healthy eating, right? According to Ayurveda. So he says that one does not attain satisfaction or nourishment by taking a handful of food, but by taking a lot of food, one does get satisfaction and nourishment. Similarly, just by starting bhakti, one does not get realization of Krishna. But when that bhakti matures into higher stages of ruchi, asakti, bhava, prema, then definitely it leads to realization of Krishna in the form of Shyam Sundar with yellow cloth. Okay. Here, he says, how you will realize me clearly? Tat shrunu, he says. Tat shrunu. यता ज्ञास्यसि, हाउ यू विल नो मी हियर फ्रॉम मी. सो व्हाट टाइप ऑफ योगा इज दिस? So what type of yoga is this? Arjuna is asking. So Krishna says in response, you will gradually attain a realization, a relationship with me. That is that yoga. What type of yoga is this? This is the yoga of relationship, where you establish a personal relationship with me. You will take shelter of me alone, not karma or jnana. Since you are my Ananya Bhakta. You see here, the first verse very clearly talking about Bhakti. So when you have to talk about Bhakti, or even predominant Bhakti, first pure Bhakti has to be defined. And then you can tell, this pure Bhakti can also be little bit adulterated with Karma or Jnana or Yoga, like that. So therefore it is appropriate that Krishna starts by describing pure devotional service here. So he says, you will be absolutely without doubt about which is better. Okay. So you will not have any doubt about should I do this? Or is this better? Or is this better? Should I completely depend on the path of bhakti? Or should I also take additional help from karma, jnana, etc.? So you will be absolutely without doubt about which is better, my impersonal aspect or my personal aspect, as indicated later in chapter 12. Klesho adhikatarastesham avyakta asakta chetasam avyakta hi gatir dukkam dehavadbir avapyate. Those who are attached to the impersonal realization encounter extreme difficulties. The unmanifest goal brings suffering to those who have bodies. So there, for a person who is not practicing pure devotional service, he may be attracted to the impersonal aspect. But a person practicing pure devotional service, he will not have any doubt. He understands very clearly that if I aspire for the impersonal aspect of the absolute truth, there will be a lot of difficulties. The easiest process is to get attached to the personal form of the Lord. He understands. He has no doubt. Like that. Asamshayam, he says. Moreover, that Brahman is just an expression of my greatness. In the Gita, I will later say, Brahmanohi pratishta aham. I am the basis of Brahman. Thus, in comparison to knowledge about me in my personal form, which is complete, which is described here as samagram, this knowledge of impersonal Brahman is incomplete. So a person who takes shelter of this path of bhakti, samagram mamnyasyasi, he will understand me in completeness. Not incompleteness, in completeness. Therefore, you will know me completely, meaning you will know me in my personal form completely, of which the Paramatma feature is an expansion and the Brahman feature is the bodily effulgence. So, complete understanding of the Lord or the absolute truth is knowing the personal form, by knowing which one automatically also understands that the Paramatma feature is actually an expansion and and the Brahman is just the bodily effulgence of the Lord, like that. Okay, so this is how Chila Vishwanatha Thakur explains the first verse. Maya asaktamana partha yogam yunjan madashraya asamshayam samagram mam hitajnyasasi tachunu. So the nature of that pure devotional service is that the person practicing pure devotional service, his mind is fixed only on Krishna as the goal. And what type of yoga is this? It is the yoga of relationship. Yogam yunjan. How is it practiced? Madashraya. where there is only taking shelter of Krishna and not any other process of karma, jnana, etc. And what is the benefit of this? Samagram mam gyasisi. One can completely understand Krishna in all his features. Tachrunu. How you can do this? Please hear from me, O Arjuna. Like that, Krishna is indicating here. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share? Ask, add. Okay. If there is none, we will continue the second verse. Krishna continues. He says, Jnanam teham sa vijnanam idam vakshyami asheshatah yad gyatvaneha bhuyonyat gyatavyam avashishyate. So he says, asheshatah te aham vakshyami. Asheshatah, without leaving any remnants, which means completely. Completely, te, unto you, aham, I, vakshyami, I shall explain. I shall explain to you completely, jnanam sa vijnanam, knowledge along with realization. So jnana, here jnana refers to knowledge of Krishna's powers, and vijnana refers to knowledge of Krishna's sweetness. So that is vijnana. I will explain to you completely knowledge of my powers and knowledge of my sweetness. Why should I know this? Yad gyatva, knowing this, anyad gyatavyam na iha bhuyo avashishyate. Nothing else remains to be known. For you to attain me, nothing else remains to be known. If you understand my knowledge, if you understand my powers, and if you understand my sweetness, nothing else remains to be known. That's what he says. I will tell you completely the knowledge of my powers and knowledge of my sweetness, by knowing which nothing else remains to be known. Srila Vishnachakadakur commenting on this, he says, before attaining the stage of attachment to me, the devotee understands about my powers. So this is very important. Knowledge of Krishna's powers is important to develop attachment to Krishna. Otherwise, if we do not understand how powerful Krishna is and directly try to understand Krishna's sweetness, we will end up being a sahajiya, actually. Or we will end up pulling Krishna down to be an ordinary personality. Okay. So he says, before attaining the stage of attachment to me, the devotee understands about my powers. After that, he realizes my sweetness. So this is the order. Okay. So first, one should understand the powers or Aishwarya. And then comes Madhurya. This is the order. Hear about both of these. Knowing this, nothing else remains to be known. For knowledge and realization of my personal aspect are included in it. So everything is included in that. So therefore, he says that I will explain to you the knowledge of my powers along with knowledge of my sweetness, knowing which nothing else remains to be known. Then he says, just give me 1 second. Okay. Then he says in the third verse, मनुष्यानां सहस्रेषु कश्चित् यतति सिद्धये यततामपि सिद्धानां कश्चिन्मां वेत्ति तत्त्वतः. मनुष्यानां सहस्रेषु अमंग्स थाउजेंड्स ऑफ मेन कश्चित् यतति सिद्धये कश्चित् सम पीपल सिद्धये दे अटेन सक्सेस यतति इन देयर एंडेवर्स सम अटेन सक्सेस इन देयर एंडेवर्स यततामपि सिद्धानां and amongst those who attain success kaschin mam veti tatvatah kaschin some of them mam veti they know me tatvatah in truth or kaschit also means hardly anyone knows me in truth so that is the point why hardly anyone knows because that endeavor should be a pure devotional endeavor. If it is not a pure devotional endeavor, how much ever one may endeavor, it will not lead to realization of Krishna. And because to receive that seed of devotion, pure devotion is very rare, therefore, without that seed of pure devotion, how much ever one may endeavor, it will not lead to realization of Krishna. Therefore, manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Amongst thousands of men, some of them attain success in their endeavors. But most of them do not attain success in their endeavors. Let us only consider those few people who attain success in their endeavors. Even amongst those who attain success in their endeavors, hardly anyone knows Krishna because they don't have, either they don't have a desire to know Krishna or they did not know the means to know Krishna. So, therefore, manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam vitvidvataha. Srila Vishwanatha Thakur commenting here, he says, knowledge of me and realization of me are rare for the jnanis and yogis who were described in the previous six chapters. That is why after describing that he says, manushyanam sahasreshu kaschit itati siddhaye, he says, first, the Lord speaks of the rarity of realizing the sweetness of the Lord amongst those persons. Okay. So first he talks about the rarity of realizing the sweetness of Krishna amongst those persons. Amongst the countless jiva, one may be a human being, amongst thousands of humans, one of them may work for spiritual progress. Amongst thousands who work for spiritual progress, only one will know me. Only one person will directly realize me truly in the form of Shyam Sundar. Even those who may accept the path of bhakti to know Krishna, it's not that immediately they will reach the stage of prema and realize Krishna. So therefore, it's very rare. This implies that the bliss from realization of personal Brahman is thousands of times greater than the bliss from realizing the impersonal Brahman. Like that. So that is suggested here in this verse. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share as it matters? Okay, if there is none, we will continue our discussion. So, very clearly, jnanam teham sa vijnanam, he mentioned. So, he mentioned that before attaining the stage of attachment to me, the devotee understands about my powers, which is mentioned, it is mentioned. So one has to first know the powers. So he's going to speak about Krishna's Aishwarya. So there is a question in the chat box. In the last line of this purport, Srila Vishwanatha Thakur says, this implies that the bliss from realization of personal Brahman is thousands of times greater than the bliss from realization of the impersonal Brahman. how this verse implies this? This is the question. So how is this verse implying? Because that is how he explains Mamveti. Amongst thousands of people, because here the argument that is given is the argument of rarity. More valuable things are more rare, because very rarely someone realizes Krishna in his personal form. Because it is rare, it implies that the bliss of realizing the personal form, which is what one attains by practice of bhakti, it must be much more superior to the bliss of realizing the impersonal Brahman. That is the argument that is presented here. Of course, this is not a completely foolproof argument. This is not a completely foolproof argument, but this is definitely a suggestion here. Okay. If there are no further discussion points or questions, we will move on to the next section, where Krishna has told or it is indicated that one should first understand about the powers of the Lord or the Aishwarya of the Lord before developing attachment to the Lord. And further attachment comes through understanding the sweetness of Krishna. So therefore, he first starts with jnana, knowledge of the powers of Krishna. Yes, Shyam Chandra Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu. Sorry for raising my hand late.
Yeah, no problem, Prabhu. Go ahead.
In the translation for Kaschid Yatati Siddhiye, it was mentioned as, can you just go back to that? Yeah. As success in their endeavors, attain success in their endeavors.
Endeavors. And
interestingly, Prabhupada's translation is endeavor for perfection. You know?
Yeah.
There is a significant, I would say, because perfection is more, I think, in depth, no? In understanding.
Perfect. Yeah, everyone will endeavor for some perfection only. You know, all the practitioners, they are endeavoring for perfection, but their understanding of perfection is very different based on their qualification. So a Karma Yogi has a different understanding of perfection. A Jnana Yogi has a different understanding of perfection. A Bhakti Yogi has a different understanding of perfection.
Okay. So basically it is the same thing. Only thing here we are saying success to their endeavor, in their endeavor. Okay.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada mentions as endeavor for perfection. Okay.
Yeah. Correct. Correct. So this way there will be some slight differences in the way the acharyas explain individual verses. That will always be there. Yeah.
Okay, Prabhu. Thank you.
Okay. So let's move on to the next part, where Krishna is going to speak about his material and spiritual energies, because knowing Krishna's power or Aishwarya is a prerequisite to developing attachment to Krishna. So Krishna starts by describing first his material energies. He says, Bhumirāponalovāyuhu kammano buddhirevacha ahankāra iti yamme bhinna prakriti rashtada. So he says, Bhumihi, earth, āpaha, water, analaha, fire, vayuhu, air, kham, ether, and as well as their sense objects. What are the sense objects? For earth, it is smell. Okay. For water, it is taste. For fire, it is form. For air, it is touch. For ether, it is sound. Okay. So, bhumi rapo analo vayu kam. Okay. Then, mano buddhi ahankar. Here, mana, many times the word mana does not refer to does not refer to mind. Here it refers to Pradhan. Okay. Pradhan is the, you can say the, you can say non-functional form of this, you know, undifferentiated form of this universe, you know. So, in which Karnodaka Sai Vishnu glances. Okay. So, mana refers to Pradhan. And when that Karnodaka Sai Vishnu's glance falls on Pradhan, it transforms into what is called as Mahatattva. So, Mahatattva is addressed as Buddhi. So, the word Buddhi is used to indicate Mahatattva also. That is why we often hear that Brahmaji's body is made of Buddhi. Brahmaji's body is made of Buddhi. That Buddhi is not intelligence. It is actually Mahatattva, which is very subtle. Okay. So, and then Ahankara. Ahankara indicates false ego. Okay. So now, false ego here indicates false ego and the products of false ego. Okay. So the products of false ego include Buddhi, which is a product of false ego in the mode of passion, and mind, which is a product of false ego in the mode of goodness. And the five knowledge senses are the Gyanendriyas, and the five working senses are the Karmendriyas. So you have false, so you have earth, water, fire, air, ether, plus their tanmatras are their sense objects. So this is 5 plus 5, 10. And then you have Pradhan, which is 11. You have Mahatattva, which is 12. And then you have Ahankar, false ego, which is 13. And then you have the 10 senses, which is which makes it 23. Then there is mind, which is 24. And then there is intelligence, which is 25. So 25 are mentioned here. If you take Pradhan out, because Kapiladev describes in his third canto, Yetat Chaturvimshatikam Ganam Pradhanikam Viduhu. So he says, these 24 items are called as products of Pradhan. So Pradhan included, it becomes 25. So if you see here, even though it seems like he is talking about 8 elements, these 8 elements actually expand into 25 elements. Okay. This is described in detail in the second canto and third canto. Okay. This is described in detail in the creation. In the primary creation, which is described in the second and third canto, this is described in detail. Okay. So, just give me a second. Just give me 1 second. Okay. So, yeah. So, there is a question in the chat box. Where is the mention of Pradhan? So, Pradhan is Manaha. What we call, what is mentioned here as Mano is actually Pradhan. Just give me. Okay, so mana is not mind here. Mana is actually Pradhan. Okay, and Buddhi is not intelligence here. Buddhi is actually Mahatattva. Okay. And then ahankar is not just ahankar, but ahankar with its products. The products are the 10 senses, and actually it should not be mahatattva here. It should be buddhi and intelligence. That is also there. Okay. He says, Iyam ashtada me binna prakritihi. These are my separated energy in 8 divisions. Okay. Like that. So, here in the purport, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, and knowledge in relation to bhakti also means knowledge of the Lord's powers. One should not think, oh, this knowledge about creation, which Krishna is talking about here, this is not devotional knowledge. One should not think like that. Knowledge in relation to bhakti also means knowledge of the Lord's powers, not knowledge of the Atma being separate from the body. Okay. That is actually sattvic knowledge, which is knowledge in relation to the process of jnana. In defining knowledge of the Lord's powers, the Lord speaks of his two energies, which is prakriti, that is superior. So two energies, okay, two types of prakriti, superior and inferior in two verses. Okay. The superior energy is the jiva, and the inferior energy is, you know, prakriti, you know, jada prakriti. Note, footnote by His Holiness Bhanuswami Maharaj. The previous verse spoke of the Lord's sweetness, vijnanam. This and the next verse describes the Lord's powers, jnanam, by describing his inferior and spirit superior energies. By the listing of the 5 gross elements beginning with earth, the subtle elements known as the sense objects, smell, taste, form, touch, and sound are understood to be included as well. So the first 5 includes 5 plus 5, 10. Okay. By the word false ego, the 10 senses which arise from it and the mahatattva, its cause, are also understood to be included. Mind and intellect are listed separately to show their greater importance amongst all the elements. So, here he says, any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share? Yes. Shyam Chandra Prabhu.
Yeah, Prabhu, can you show that verse again?
Which verse? Okay.
The same verse. Correct. So now the 5 constituents, earth, water, fire, air, ether, you have mentioned about the various sense objects, sound, taste, form, then
touch and smell.
Sound, yeah, touch and smell. But actually, ether sound is fine. But air would include sound and
touch. Yeah.
Fire would include, fire includes
all three. And earth includes all 5. Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, because one against one it is shown. So that's
Because that is the predominant.
Okay. Okay.
In ether, sound is predominant and only sound. In air, even though sound is there, but the touch is the predominant. In fire, even though touch and sound are there, but form is predominant. In water, even though form, touch, sound, and taste are there, but taste is predominant. Similarly, in earth, smell is predominant.
Right. And where is the consciousness fitting here? That would come under...
soul.
So, in that 23...
Oh, you are talking about 20. Chitta. Chitta, right?
Chitta. Yeah.
Chitta is Mahatattva.
Mahatattva. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Oh, fine. Thank you.
Right. Yes, Kesho Priyam.
Prabhuji, like there's mind and intelligence, according to footnote of Bhanusa Maharaj, is it a separate entity or as you explained, it's Pradhana and Mahatattva? I couldn't get the point.
No, it is mind and intelligence are actually products of false ego.
Yes, Prabhuji.
They are, so when you say ahankara, ahankara includes mind, which is a product of sattvic ahankar, and intelligence, which is a product of rajasic ahankar.
Yes, Prabhuji, but what is the footnote in place, Prabhuji? The last line of Bansa Maharaj.
Okay, the footnote. Mind, it's not footnote. This is not footnote. This is actually Srila Vishnu Chakrathakur's only.
Oh, okay.
Mind and intellect are listed separately to show their greater importance amongst all the elements. I think it should, it's not mind and intelligence. I think it's, I will have to confirm with Maharaj. I don't think it, because Manobuddhi is there, but Manobuddhi, he has already translated as Pradhan and Mahatattva. I think yes, it should Prabhuji, be Pradhan and Mahatattva here. Yeah.
Yes, Prabhuji. That is,
that is my understanding. Yeah. I will Prabhuji. Confirm it with Banaswami Maharaj. I think it should be Pradhan Prabhuji. And Mahatattva. Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Yes. Sukhava Mataji.
My relations.
Hare Krishna. Atandottama. Mataji, your voice is trailing back and forth. Can you speak close to the mic?
Right. Yeah, let me get my...
It's still a little feeble, Mataji. Very feeble. Your voice is very feeble.
Hear me now?
This is better.
Yeah, with my headset. I think I missed something about, was it Pradhan or Prana? You said all Pradhan, these 24 Pradhan. Elements are part Pradhan. Of Pradhan. Can you explain Pradhan to me? Because I missed it. Sorry.
Okay. So, they are not part of Pradhan. They are products of Pradhan. So,
products.
So during creation, there is when we say that universes, millions of universes come out of the body of Mahavishnu. So it is not actually universes in their fully functional form. Actually, they come out in the seed forms, and that seed form of the universe is called as Pradhan. And then when the seed form comes here in this Pradhan, you have all the ingredients which are needed for universal creation, but in an inactive way, in an inactive form. So they have all the ingredients, but it is inactive. It is just like a logged godown, which is full of ingredients for cooking. You know, it has all the ingredients for cooking, but the godown is logged. So now the godown has to be open. So then the Lord glances at this Pradhan. Okay. And the glass and the glance includes two elements which Pradhan does not have. One is the Jiva. And the Jiva comes with his karma and his nature or swabhava that he has accumulated over many, many lifetimes. And his glance also has the second element of time. So this Pradhan has all the ingredients that are needed for manifesting this universe, except for Jiva and time. So these two things activate this Pradhan. And when this Pradhan gets activated, then it manifests what is called as Mahatattva. These are subtle forms. What exactly they are, we have not seen or experienced. So it is little bit theoretical. But nevertheless, it is described in Bhagavatam. And further, when the glance further falls on Mahatattva, it transforms into what is called as false ego or ahankar. And further, when the glands interacts with false ego, it divides itself into three parts, which is false ego in the mode of goodness, false ego in the mode of passion, false ego in the mode of ignorance. And further, when the glands interacts with these three types of false ego, this false ego in mode of goodness gives rise to mind. And there are personalities called as sense devatas. Sense devatas are demigods who are in charge of functioning of our various senses. You know, for eyes, it is sun god, Surya Dev. For nose, it is the Ashwini Kumaras. For the tongue, it is Varuna. For your hands, it is Indra. So like that, each of these senses are controlled by these devatas. So they also are products of false ego and mode of goodness. Then from false ego and mode of passion, you get the five knowledge acquiring senses. Then you get the five functioning senses. And then you get intelligence. And then you get prana. Prana is the life air.
Okay.
All these are products of false ego and mode of passion. And then in false ego and mode of ignorance, you get the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and the five sense objects in the form of touch, form, taste, etc. So the five sense objects, these are manifested when the glance of the Lord interacts with the false ego and mode of ignorance. So now that you have all these elements, further, the Lord, further creation explains how the Lord brings all these individual elements together and makes them into a functional universe that is described still further. So, Pradhan is actually the seed form of this universe, which is in an inactive form. But because ultimately all these elements, you know, starting with Mahatattva, false ego, and then the sense devatas, mind, and all of this is essentially manifested by the interaction of the Lord's glands with the Pradhan. So therefore, all of them are called as products of Pradhan. Like that.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And this is like the field of activities that Jajiva has to function within, all of that.
Correct.
So, correct. Yeah, correct. Beautiful.
Yes.
Thank you. That was a great, I appreciate you taking the time to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mother. Thank you. Shyam Chandrapur.
Yes, Prabhu, beautiful explanation. So this, in the Pradhan, as you mentioned that all the seed form, the various universes which are going, so they all go and accumulate in one corner of the entire creation, like a cloud, which they say is 25% of the entire creation.
That kind of a description is there. That is after after the seed emanates out of the body of Mahavishnu, they occupy a part of the spiritual sky. That's how it is described by Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah, so all this comes and then goes in a particular corner of the creation. And
I mean, whether that corner is exactly a geographical description or if it's an allegorical description, I don't know for sure. But certainly it occupies a part of the spiritual sky, whether it is they all congregate in one part only or are they, probably like that. Yes.
Okay. I was thinking which one comes first? Is the cloud formation comes first? I mean, the cloud itself is a Pradhan. And then the seeds of the various universes are going and accumulating there, or this universe emanates from Garbha, from Karmadaksha Vishnu, and then they go in a particular place, and then that becomes a cloud of
cloud is exact. It's like an allegorical presentation. It's not very literal.
Right. I mean, aggregation of all the material universes happen in that particular area, correct? No?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Shyamlal Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Can you hear me?
Yes, Prabhu.
So, Prabhuji, wonderful explanation of the elements. I do not remember exactly where, but in some of the purports, we hear of the 24 elements.
Yeah.
This pradhana that you have described, I mean, I do not recollect of hearing it anywhere else. Of course, the description is wonderful. Yeah.
You do not. You
24
do not,
or 25?
Yeah, 24 number is, these are the 24 elements of Prakriti, 24 divisions of Prakriti, and that Prakriti is Pradhan only. So therefore, if you include Pradhan, then it becomes 25. But these 24 are the divisions of Pradhan only. That is why there is only 24. That is why the 24 number comes.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Take care. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Right. Okay. So, if there are no further discussion points or questions, we will move on to the next verse. Krishna has spoken about the first of his energies, first of his prakriti, which is apara prakriti, or the inferior energy, which is made of these 24 elements. Bhumir, Apo, Analo, Vayu, Kam, Mano, Buddhi, Revacha, Ahankara, Iti, Yamme, Bhinna, Prakritir, Ashtada. Ashtada here refers to 8 divisions and not 8 elements. And how it is 8 divisions, we saw. Right? So then, he says, Apareyam itastu anyam prakritim vidhime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. He says, Iyam apara. So this is connected to the previous verse. Iyam, whatever I have discussed, is apara. It is my inferior energy. Vidditu, but you should know, Arjuna, me param prakritim, that I have my superior energy. Itastu anyam, which is quite different from this inferior energy. I have a superior energy which is quite different from this inferior energy. And what is that superior energy? Jiva bhutam. It is the jivas. O Mahabaho, O mighty armed Arjuna, it is the jivas. Yaya idham dharyate jagat. Who employ the inferior energy for their enjoyment. So the superior energy in the form of the superior energy in the form of the jivas engage the inferior energy of matter for their enjoyment. Okay. So here Srila Vishwanathachakravarti writes, this prakriti is called the external energy. As it is not conscious, it is inferior. It is called as apara because it is not conscious. Know also the other energy, the tatastha shakti, which gives rise to the jivas, which is superior because it is conscious. So this is para prakriti. Why is the jiva considered superior? The unconscious matter is employed by this conscious jiva for the jiva's own enjoyment. Therefore, the jiva is said to be the superior energy of Krishna. Because the unconscious matter is employed by this conscious jiva for his enjoyment. Therefore, he is called superior. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share, ask, add. Okay. We still have 3 minutes. Maybe we may get to complete one more verse. Krishna continues. Etadyonini bhutani sarvani tyupadharaya aham krishnasya jagatah prabhava pralayastata upadharaya. Understand, O Krishna, O Arjuna, sarvani bhutani. Understand that all the things of this universe, everything that you see in this universe, yetad yonini iti, they have their origin in these two energies. Whatever you see in this universe, they have their origin in these two energies, in the para prakriti and the apara prakriti. Tata aham, and that I am prabhavaha pralayaha. Prabhavaha means I am the origin, source, and pralayaha, I am the dissolution. Krishnasya jagataha, of the whole universe. So Krishna is speaking about his energies. He spoke about the material energy. He spoke about the Jiva Shakti. And he says that, understand, my dear Arjuna, that everything that you see in this universe have their origin in these two energies. And that I am the origin and dissolution of this whole universe. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti says, the Lord is the cause of the world by these two energies. So the Lord is the cause of the world by these two energies, by the Jiva Shakti and Pradhan, you know, the products of Pradhan. Okay. Know that all moving and non-moving entities arise from these two energies, Maya Shakti and Jiva Shakti, Kshetra and Kshetrakya. Of course, there is one more Shakti which he has not very explicitly mentioned, which is Kala Shakti, the energy of time, which also the Lord introduces into the universe through his glands. So he says, I alone am the creator of all this universe, since these two energies arise from me, and I alone am the destroyer of the universe, since it merges into me, the possessor of the two energies. So he is the destroyer in the sense, of course, the universe merges back into his body after dissolution. Like that. Okay. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions before we wind up for the day? It's already 9:30 now. So we will pause here. Yes, Shyam Chandra Prabhu. A quick question. Yes, Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu. Why is there no consciousness in the apara shakti? Because in Brahma Savita, Lord says, when Brahma says that Lord enters into every, even in inanimate objects also, as an atom, yeah. No? So when he's entering, why there should not be any consciousness?
Well, he enters into them, and what does he do? He enters into them and allows them to exhibit their dharma. Like sugar is sweet. Okay. We say sugar is sweet, but sugar is not conscious. But sugar is sweet because the Lord as Paramatma empowers the sugar to exhibit its dharma or sweetness. Water is fluid. Why? Because the Lord as Paramatma enters into that water and empowers it to exhibit its dharma of fluidity. But they are not conscious. So, even inanimate objects, the Lord enters not to empower them to exhibit their dharma. But Jiva is a type of energy where the nature of the Jiva itself is to become conscious, but to exhibit that ability to be conscious, that also the Jiva needs the empowerment of the Paramatma. So Paramatma empowers the two energies in two different ways. He empowers them to exhibit their dharma, but only Jiva has the dharma to be conscious and matter has the dharma to be unconscious. But even to exhibit that dharma, it needs the empowerment of Paramatma, like that.
Okay, Prabhu. Thank you very much.
Right. Okay, so I think we should pause here. It's already 3 minutes over time. Thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. We will continue this discussion further next Friday. So I wish you all a very pleasant weekend ahead. So we will all meet again on Friday. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna.